Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast for Tuesday, March 23rd. Michael Beller here with Jake Seeley and Brandon Funston. We have been in the new league year for a little bit short of a week, and we had quite the flurry of signings, you guys, since the last time we had an episode. Right, we had the fun in the tampering period. Then things sort of slowed down once the actual league year began, and then after that, from about Thursday afternoon through yesterday or even this morning, we have had quite a bit of action in the free agent market. So that gives us plenty to talk about on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. So thank you, teams across the league, for not jamming everything into that 3-4 day period and stretching things out a little bit. They've given us a whole show's worth of stuff to talk about, of signings to talk about. So I don't know, you guys, I'm very thankful for the NFL and the way things have gone and that little lull that gave us this boomlet of things for us to talk about here. I'm feeling good going into this episode, you guys.
I'm feeling good too. A new word, boomlet. I don't think I've heard that one before, but
is it a real word? I like it. It's a made up word. It's a pretty solid made up word.
Yeah, follow either.
No. It's for sure a real word. You know, I've actually had this discussion before. So it's something I go back to. It was like first coined in like 1850 something. A small boom, specifically a sudden increase in business activity. There you go.
Mark Twainism or something.
I don't know who coined it, but that's what we've had. Right, we've had a sudden increase in business activity. If the business activity is the free agent market in the NFL world, so it's been fun to watch over these last few days. I mean,
since the last show. So, I mean,
now you're just ranting on my boomlet parade, which is kind of lame of you guys.
We're trying to make it bigger than a boomlet. We're trying to make it a full-on boom. We're trying to make it like a bomb-omb. How about that?
A bomb-omb. I love that. Let's bring some Mario into this into this show here. All right, so let's say it was a boom then. Let's say it was a boom, and let's just jump right in. Jake, give us your biggest signing, whether it was good, bad, whatever. What was the thing that you took away the biggest piece of news from in this boom that we've had since last Thursday?
Since last Thursday? Okay, yeah. Well, I was going to say, because there's two different... I'll answer the other question in case people didn't pay attention to last week. I still think the biggest is the team as a whole is the Curtis Samuel and Ryan Fitzpatrick addition to the footballs. That's the one I love the most. The biggest boom, I think, whether or not you agree with the impact for fantasy purposes, has to be Kenny Golladay, because we hadn't covered that since Brandon and I were talking, because that happened later that day. And so we had Juju during that time, a few others, but I think the biggest boom for anything is that, although I don't think it's the biggest boom for his fantasy potential.
Why not?
Well, I was going to let Brandon give his answer.
Yeah, I'm...
No, no. You want my answer first? You're getting stomped on, Brandon.
We'll get to Brandon, but let's go on Golladay, and then Brandon, give us your take on Golladay, and then we'll get your big boom.
Okay, that works. So if anybody that hasn't read the write-up, which, by the way, we still have that dollar offer going, right?
Check that out.
Yes, yeah, there you go. See, look, the man of the company. For the Kenny Golladay thing, I put it in there. I just compared Stafford and Daniel Jones for the last 2 years. So it wasn't just 1 year. It wasn't the injuries, missed it, all of that. Just the last 2 years. You pick a category, pick a metric. Daniel Jones is worse. Catchable percentage, on target percentage, 20-yard-plus plays, completion on 20-plus-yard plays, air attempt, air put completions, pick one. Daniel Jones is worse by 2, 3, 4, some spots, just worse. And look, yes, Daniel Jones hasn't had this. And yes, Daniel Jones, you know, we could all talk about Darius Slayton wasn't equipped to be a number one in the big outside threat. And Sterling Shepard's been hit or miss. And Evan Ingram's dropping passes, blah, blah. It's just Daniel Jones versus Matthew Stafford. Daniel Jones is not Matthew Stafford. So let's take that one. And then two is, you could argue, easily. Kenny Galladay's now got a hell of a lot more competition for opportunities on the Giants, as crazy as that might sound to some people, than he did with the Lions. When you talk about Saquon Barkley's going to be back and healthy, and then Shepard and Slayton and Ingram, and now they're throwing Kyle Rudolph, who's probably going to block a ton, but, you know, there's a lot here. And really what it comes down to is that Kenny Galladay on a lot of teams, even right back with the Lions, could have been similar to what we saw, his explosion of the 1,190 yards and 11 touchdowns from 2 years ago. You tell me 1,200, 1,300 yards, 10-plus touchdowns on a lot of teams. On the Giants, I think it's about 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. And that's my issue, because if you give him 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns, he's wide receiver 23 or 24 the past 2 years. And I think Kenny Galladay on the Giants is a wide receiver too, and that low-end wide receiver too, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah, well, okay, so Daniel Jones actually was decent on the deep ball, though, last year, right? I mean, that's – he actually had some –
But he wasn't – he's decent. This is the Derek Carr argument for everybody that hates on Derek Carr. He's decent. He's not miserable. He's decent, but he's not Matthew Stafford, and he's not even top 10. So he's no Jared Goff. Like, he's not that miserable, but he's not – again, yeah. I threw out all those things. Right. That includes air yards to attempt completion and 20 yards. So the completion percentage on 20-plus yards downfield – Stafford was 73.3%, Daniel Jones 70.9%. So not a huge gap, but Stafford bests him in every single category.
Well, deep ball passer rating, Daniel Jones looks like he was number 3.
Passer rating's trash.
Come on, something. You said every metric. I'm throwing out one that's not a bet that wasn't on there. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I was
if there's one
like,
thing
as a whole,
that offers a glimmer of hope, it's the fact that, and listen.
The worst metric in football?
Well, think a couple of years ago, Darius Slayton making all those big plays downfield with Daniel Jones. I mean, that's Kenny Galladay now, and it's going to be more of them. And so, yeah, I think Kenny Galladay goes from a guy that when he's healthy and was with Detroit and Matt Stafford was healthy – like, even when Matt Stafford wasn't, I mean, Kenny Galladay was pretty consistent week in and week out. I think what you're going to see is a higher volatility rate from him, but I think you're still going to have some huge days mixed in there. I think it's just going to be less reliable. So, yeah, I don't like it. I mean, I think I agree. It's a downgrade. I was just going to throw something else that kind of threw me off, and it's a smaller signing. But I love Josh Jacobs, and I couldn't figure out the Kenyon Drake – deal with the Raiders, and the Raiders trading like every one of their offensive linemen. I don't know what this Raiders team is trying to do. And what kills me is that Jacobs, the big narrative last year, and I pushed it, was that he was going to get a big jump in receptions, and he got a little jump from 20 to 33. But I think, you know, he's basically capped now, because what else is Kenyon Drake going to do other than spell him, you know, when he needs a break and be the guy that's playing, you know, playing the third down role there. So I hate that from a Josh Jacobs signing. I mean, from a Josh Jacobs perspective.
Yeah, I mean, is this just a straight up no win situation? Right. I mean, that's the way it feels, right? It's bad for Jacobs. It's not good for Drake. It just feels like sort of like what we talked about with Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry last week, that we went from having, you know, maybe a low end RB1 in Jacobs and a mid tier RB2, maybe depending on where he landed, with the potential to reach up even higher in Kenyon Drake, to two guys who you're going to have to see where things shake out and where they land in ADP before you would even think about drafting them.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that Brandon's saying this, but I think the perception with Drake is that he's a great pass catcher, and he's not. And really what it was like, this is one of the reasons in the pre-agency period when I was predicting best spots for fantasy, is I said, put him on the Falcons, where he doesn't need to catch a lot, but he can step into that Todd Gurley role. Put him on the Seahawks. Now, I think we'll get to that, but I think Chris Carson is definitively a better fit, and I'm glad he's back. But I think Kenyon Drake, in a situation like that, even if you swapped out, take Jacobs off. Let's just say he's gone off the Raiders. Replacing Jacobs is good for Drake, and I think that's why it's worse. Mm-hmm. That's why I actually think it's worse than what Brandon was saying. So, because I think Drake replicates Josh Jacobs a lot. He's a better pass catcher than most, but he's not the third. He's not a pure pass. He's not Theo Riddick, Jalen Richard, guys that have been on this team. He's not Tariq Cohen. So I don't know, and I say that because I don't know that the Raiders still aren't going to utilize that piece. And if you're utilizing that piece and Kenyon Drake just replicates Josh Jacobs, Josh Jacobs might be 15 touches a week. So now he's a mid-tier RB2. Kenyon Drake is completely off the radar of being usable in fantasy. And as you mentioned, just caps Josh Jacobs for probably being a 25, 30 catch guy at best for a season. So I hate this signing from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah. Well, what did Devontae Booker sign for? I don't remember what you guys remember, but I'm imagining that Kenyon Drake got a sizable amount more than what Booker did.
Was it two for 12 with the Giants?
2 for 12 for Booker? That's got to be way too much. $6 million a year for – that's starting running back money now.
Am I overshooting that? I don't know. The Giants ever paid for everybody, so I'm just trying to think.
I bet you it's 2 for 6. Yeah. But
– yeah, it's not in our – hold on. Keep talking.
It is 2 for 6. I'm just saying – it was the 6, so yeah, okay. it's 2 for 6. You're right.
Yeah, you got to figure they're going to, you know, basically give him Devontae Booker's role but elevate it. And I think what my point was is exactly what your point is, Jake, is that Jacobs goes from – maybe 20 to 15, like in like expected touches per week. That's not good. That does suddenly drops him way down the list. You know, where I had him as a definitive kind of back end first rounder, I think you're now talking about him as a back end second rounder.
Chris Carson.
This is one that the real life football world and the fantasy football world are in total agreement. We hate that it's getting taken away, that these opportunities are getting taken away from Jacobs. We hate that a usable piece, maybe not a superstar piece, but a usable piece, certainly in Kenyon Drake, is now totally off the board. And Shield Kapadia, our colleague here, gave this an F, a signing grade of F for the Raiders by making this move. And I mean, very hard.
Shield, way to go.
Yeah, right. It's impossible to argue with because, as you said, Brandon, we just can't figure out what the Raiders are doing. One team that's easy to figure out what they're doing, the Seattle Seahawks, Chris Carson back in town. We're going to go to our Seahawks expert here, Brandon. I mean, I think roundly we all like this signing and like that Chris Carson's back with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, and now it's just the same old narrative. Can you play 16 games, you know, instead of 14 or 13 and leave some fantasy managers hanging in December? But other than that, like, he just fits – he fits well in this offense. He's elevated his passing game. And there's bigger questions about Penny right now than there is about Carson. And there's really nobody else there to worry about. And so, yeah, maybe, you know, as last year was mostly a rest year for Penny and a rehab year, and he got a little bit of run towards the end. Maybe he comes back and he brings most of what he had, vitality wise before the big injury. But, it's no concern. Even last year when Carson had a whole lot less touches than he typically had, he was very productive. So there's just not a whole lot of worry here. I think he's back to just being the guy that we're going to talk about probably in that, 15 to 20 range at the running back position. And not a whole lot has changed other than the fact that they got him for a couple more years secure.
Yeah, there's no question there. He's been 14 points per game for the past 3 years, just above. So he's always fringe RB1. It's just a question of health. And I would take him over Jacobs because where some people might argue, well, I don't want to deal with the injury. Well, here's the thing with Chris Carson is then I know I can just turn to the next guy that the Seahawks turn to with Josh Jacobs. If he gets hurt, I mean, is it going to be Kenyon Drake or is Kenyon Drake just going to step in as we were just talking about? Is he just going to be Josh Jacobs? And if that's the case, he's still RB 15 or 16. At least Chris Carson, I know I can get like RB 11, 12 until he gets hurt and then try to replace him with probably RB 15 or 16 as we've seen from before. So I just think it's better upside just to go ahead and take it.
Yeah, last year, points per game in half PPR leagues, these guys were actually back-to-back. You had Josh Jacobs as the RB12 in points per game in PPR leagues and Chris Carson as the RB13. I don't think there's any reason to expect anything different from Chris Carson this season. So this was one that was... Yeah, right. It's going to be like a drop for Jacobs. Carson, though, we should get right back in there. An easy fantasy win across the board with Chris Carson going back to the Seahawks. It'll be interesting to see where he does end up landing, right? It feels like he's getting into the range of a little bit disrespected because he's so kind of boring, right? I mean, like Chris Carson isn't going to blow you away. He's not going to be a top five running back. He's not going to catch a million passes. And it seems like a guy like him could get a little bit underdrafted. This is just my speculation at this point, so many months out from, you know, any ADP consensus starting to even just barely form. But I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Carson, even though he's had this year after year after year of being in the low-end one, high-end two range and points per game, if he ends up getting pushed because of some of the more exciting guys who are entering the game or maybe expecting a jump in their production in the 2021 season. Will Fuller, this one feels like a win to me too, guys. Going to Miami, it's definitely not a win to make the quarterback change that he's making, but if we were already assuming something like that was going to be happening, I think this is a pretty good landing spot for Will Fuller. Where are you at on this one, Jake?
I think it's a net neutral, honestly, because I think the opportunity is good, but I think the situation is much, much worse going from Watson to Tua. And I'm a huge Tua fan. And I do think Tua can be better. And I do think he can have a better deep ball than what we've seen. But for even if that's the case, and even if he grows in that aspect, you're talking about the offensive style too. Like, part of the reason Preston Williams didn't really fit last year and had so many issues, whether or not being healthy, is because they're moving to this kind of pseudo hybrid-y West Coast offense. And if that's the case, I don't want Will Fuller in that offense. That's part of it. But if you talk about Watson versus Tagovailoa. I was getting tongue-tied trying to say both. I was trying to combine his first and last name. But anyway, I did the same thing in the article as I did with Stafford and Daniel Jones. And I looked at it, and you talk about completion of 20-plus yards downfield, catchable, on-target percentage. Actually, the catchable and on-target percentage, 5% point difference from Watson. That's just overall, not even deep ball. That's just overall catchability. And then you talk about all the numbers. It's a drop off, but it's a good opportunity for him. He can step in next to Devontae Parker. So Will Fuller is going to continue to be the same Will Fuller, at least how he's always been for me. He's going to be a low end wide receiver 2, high end wide receiver 3, probably finish a little bit higher than that. Probably finishes more of the middle of the pack wide receiver 2, but it's going to be that same roller coaster where it's 1 week 120 yards and a touchdown, and next week, you know, 2 for 32. And that's just what you have to deal with when you have Will Fuller. Hopefully his price gets down to wide receiver 3 and I can have him on a few rosters, but I think I'm still going to miss out.
Yeah.
You know, I think what's interesting, you know, we talked about, and you know, we saw it last year, the average depth of target for Tua and just how he, you know, the game was very short and intermediate range. And I think the signing is curious because it represents that Miami believes that they can unlock him or you know, open things up for him. And so either they know going in that he's capable of that, or they want to push him to do that. Otherwise, you go out and you sign Juju Smith-Schuster, right? And try to fit him, you know, someone better to what we saw from him last year. So to me, it represents that they're going to try to really open things up for Tua. Yeah. I'll be interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And you're teaming him up with Devontae Parker, with Mike Gesicki. I mean, you've got a lot of guys who want to get vertical now in this passing game. And so I think, like you said, Brandon, it's a sign both. I think both, right? Not only that they want to open it up, but that they believe Tua can open things up and be much more dangerous of a thrower of the ball down the field. Like, I don't know, with this coaching staff, with what we've seen from them, they don't seem like the sort of coaching staff that is going to try to fit square pegs into round holes. I don't think this is a team that's going to reverse engineer personnel to scheme. I think they're going to let personnel drive the scheme that they end up running. And so the fact that they were willing to go out there and make this signing, a guy who was very popular, a guy who had plenty of interest on the free agent market, you bring him in alongside what you already have, tells me that they believe Tua can open it up and not just want him to open it up. And that definitely, I think, is a good sign and something we can take into the 2021 season. You mentioned Juju Smith-Schuster. I know that this was a guy who we just didn't necessarily think at Jake, right? I mean, you were all over the fact that he was not going to be back in Pittsburgh, but here he is back in Pittsburgh. I mean, are we dealing with the same? Let me actually phrase it like this. When we sit down to draft in a couple of months, are we going to have to assume that we're dealing with the same week in, week out headache with all of these guys in Pittsburgh?
I think it's potentially worse next year, honestly. And that's why I scoffed, is also because they had an offer on the table that was very similar from the Chiefs. Like, I understand. So I didn't think he was going to be back with Pittsburgh because of their situation with their salary cap. And look, I say it more than anybody else. You can manipulate the salary cap. Look at what the Giants are doing. So you can do that and manipulate it so they can find ways to get money. But if it was going to be a one-year deal, this is the other reason I was doubling down and saying it wasn't going to happen, because where are you going to maximize? If you are Juju Smith-Schuster, you're like, I'm going to maximize my value to say, you know what? I'm not getting the contract this year. I'll get it in 2022. Why are you back with Pittsburgh? Why? You could have just played with Patrick Mahomes. Are you that scared of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce not letting you really maximize your value? Then pick another team. I just don't get it. I don't get it because Chase Claypool already made a ton of noise as a rookie, and he's a better outside wide receiver. You tell me talent as a whole, I'll still take Juju, but I think Claypool's pushing him, and he's better outside. You know my love for Diontae Johnson, who I think is clearly the number one on this team and was the number one from a fantasy perspective, too. So where does Juju go? He just replicates last year, which is a fringe wide receiver too. He's going to be short to intermediate all the time, especially with what Ben is at this point of his career. I just don't get it. I don't get it from a logic perspective. And when you talk about fantasy, I think he's a wide receiver 3 because similar to what you were talking about before with the Josh Jacobs, Chris Carson situation is that it's not just who he finished ahead of last year. So you got Curtis Samuel was behind him. You could say finishes in front of him. Terry McLaurin was just behind him in a full season, now playing with Curtis Samuel. So DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, they both don't have Curtis Samuel. The rookie is possibly one or two of those surpasses him. So you can go down this list. I just don't even think he makes the top 25 next year.
Well, so do you think the
Brandon,
reason...
let me jump in.
Okay.
Let me jump in for a second. I mean, to me, he feels like knockoff Jarvis Landry.
Yeah.
I think that's. I feel like that's what
that's
we're looking
a good at. One. I think it's Cole Beasley. That's enough. I mean, that's...
well, so I wonder if his reasoning is that, you know, he's going to go out there again in free agency in a year. I had 128 targets. I'm in one of the most pass-heavy systems. I can sell 97 catches and 9 touchdowns. It wasn't pretty for us in fantasy, but you can go out and you can sell that. And he's ridiculously young still.
It's true.
And Pittsburgh might have to throw more. I mean, they have no running game. They have their offensive lines in shambles. They're losing key defensive players. And, you know, so I think the 128 targets might be still in play for him. If he gets another 97 catches and he pushes 9 touchdowns, even if he doesn't get 1,000 yards, it's a bunch of low volume stuff. In the middle of your 20s, coming off a couple of those years, in a familiar system, might have been the safest play for him.
That's safe. Yeah.
It was safe.
Right.
No guts, no glory.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen him in Kansas City. I would just love to see them have a third pass catcher who demands some sort of target volume, meaningful, like week in, week out target volume. I would love to see how they would weave a third guy in like that. So that, no guts, no glory, it sort of stinks from a fantasy perspective that we didn't get to see Juju end up in Kansas City. I think that would have been fun. Just someone like that who would have to get, I don't know, even like a dude who's going to command 6.5 targets per game alongside Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, I think would be a lot of fun to see. I don't think we're getting that this year, and dealing with Juju back in Pittsburgh. Who knows what we're going to ultimately end up getting from that picture. Let's take a step down here, guys. Let's take a step down. Obviously, Carson, Drake, Galladay, Fuller, Juju, those are going to be obviously headline-grabbing names no matter where they end up. Let's take a little bit of a step down. Let's actually go to one that happened, I believe this was this morning and not late Monday night. Mike Davis going to the Atlanta Falcons. This feels like not a bad landing spot at all for Mike Davis and his fantasy value with what he did a season ago, stepping in for the injured Christian McCaffrey. Obviously, the production, the week-by-week production slowed as the season went on, but he showed himself to be a useful guy in a featured role. And, you know, Jake, there's no reason to expect he's not going to have that sort of role in Atlanta, right?
Yes, there is. I just want to jump in here. This is Chicago all over again.
Somebody?
He gets 1 month of everybody talking about him as the guy until Atlanta drafts the guy that's going to be their guy.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going to go. Atlanta's, you know, maybe it's not Harris or Etienne or ETN, however, we still, it seems to be a non-consensus on that one. Maybe, can I get a video of his name? Like when I looked up Tariq Cohen, can I get a video of his mom saying his name? And tell us exactly.
It's got to be Etienne.
I feel like it's Etienne.
But I looked it up and there was an ETN out there for, so, whatever.
I mean, I don't speak French, but that's not how the French language works.
I know, but we've had this whole argument before about the whole how the French, like all these languages and how they pronounce their own names. But anyway, that aside.
If it were ETN, it would be ETN-y, you know?
No, it's not necessarily. Look, I'm going to type it. I'm going to do two things at once. So anyway.
We've got to have a French speaker on staff who we can ask this, but there's just no way that's how the language works.
It's not that it's not as French. It's his name. Like, look at my last name. It's not Seeley.
But it's a French. Look, it's a French name. I understand that he wasn't born in Paris, but it's a French name, his last name.
Right. No, see, I'm pulling up the same thing. This is from Greenville Online, 3 things you may not know about Clemson running back Travis Etienne. How you pronounce his last name is just like the letters E-T-N. Etienne.
That's dumb.
And, hold on, it's not even French. It's actually technically Cajun Louisiana, which I know is French descent, but... it's actually, if you pronounced it from there, it would actually be Achen.
Ooh.
You know what? I would have more respect for that than ETN. I would get on board with Achen over ETN.
So I'm going to go with this until somebody from Clemson or himself tells me otherwise, but I'm sticking with
ETN. Or the Atlanta Falcons, perhaps, in a couple of months, I guess.
That's the point that we need to stick on, is that Atlanta's not done at running back. And if they are, maybe it's a day two, day three running back who kind of doesn't take over for 4 to 6 weeks. So maybe to your point, Brandon, is it's a month now, but then it's also a month in the season. So enjoy Mike Davis for the brief amount of time. But Mike Davis has been Ryan Fitzpatrick of running backs. He's been the stopgap.
I like that.
Nobody wants him to be the answer, but they're okay if he is.
I think that's fair. He's serviceable. He's just a serviceable, you know, bridge running back. I like the Fitzpatrick comparison. I think really says it all.
This Atlanta offense, and it's going to be an interesting one to watch with Arthur Smith there as the head coach. And, Mike Davis, he'll fit in some way. And this will be a guy who maybe we recalibrate what the draft value, the fantasy draft value is for him after the NFL draft. How about Philip Lindsay going to Houston? This was one that didn't necessarily expect right after they make the addition of Mark Ingram. They felt like a team that could be done except for the draft at the running back position after bringing in Mark Ingram. But then they go out, and bring in Philip Lindsay. And I don't know. I'm having trouble figuring out if I think this is better for him or worse for him now that he's teamed up with Mark Ingram versus being teamed up with Melvin Gordon had he remained on that second year or that second round tender with the Broncos. Where are we landing on him, Jake?
I'll give you the same thing I told the person who asked in the column. Go watch Wasting Time video. That's exactly what you're doing with this entire backfield. David Johnson, Mark Ingram, Philip Lindsay, get the hell away from this team. And we're not even talking about who the hell knows what the quarterback situation is going to be like. I want nothing to do with – as of today, Brandon Cooks is even starting to look sketchier than he was. This is a disgusting team right now.
Yeah, let alone who knows what's going on with the Deshaun Watson situation. But I think from a Philip Lindsay standpoint, you put yourself in training camp alongside a couple, you know, is it David Johnson 30 yet? He's got to be right there knocking on the door. But Mark Ingram's right in his 30s. I feel like Lindsay's going to show well from a, from an athleticism standpoint at this point, you know, compared to what those guys have left in the tank. So, and, you know, they're going to be more injury prone. So maybe we'll see during the season, you know, a higher upside of Lindsay just being able to be the man for short windows of time. So I can see it working out, but there's no bankable angle here, you know? And so I agree with Jake. It's just a mess.
Yeah, this will be one that we watch in I was going to say spring training, baseball on the brain, in training camp. even if Lindsay out-athleticizes every single, or Ingram and Johnson, which we expect him to do, and probably has the highest ceiling of the three should he get a backfield to himself, like, it's not like these guys are just going to go away. And it's going to be a situation where we're talking about all three of these guys, and certainly at least two of them being involved. Ingram got pushed aside in Baltimore last year in a crowded backfield. Maybe that happens again in Houston, but this is a backfield where we know at least two guys are going to have meaningful enough roles from a touch standpoint that it's going to make it hard for anyone to stand out. So not necessarily the greatest landing spot from a fantasy perspective for Philip Lindsay. Someone else here that I asked you guys about this. So last week I missed our Thursday show that you guys did alone. Excellent job, by the way, big time kudos. But I was doing our college basketball show, looking at the tournament, and I still edited it, right? I still edited it. I produced it. I put it up on the site. When you guys sent me your clips, when you sent me your tracks, I asked, I think it was you, Brandon, right? Cause you sent it to me after. And I asked, please tell me that the Jared Cook signing happened. Please tell me you were able to get that in. Because it was Thursday. It was right around the time you were sending him to me. And you told me it didn't happen. So
it would have been about 22 minutes longer had it happened before that. Because that would have been about the length of Jake's rant.
You got it. At the end, it was just the fart noises. That's what you got.
Is that it? Is that the full-on analysis we've got here, Jake, for Jared Cook going to the Chargers?
100% the full-on analysis, just more fart noises. Everybody else can go ahead and enjoy drafting Jared Cook while I sit back and laugh at your wasted draft pick, because it's Jared Cook is Jared Cook is Jared Cook. As Lenny Melnick would say, is a rookie is a rookie is a rookie. Well, the same thing. You're not going to get anything different than Jared Cook is. He's touchdown reliant. Good luck guessing what weeks it's going to be, because he shows up when he's not supposed to. He doesn't when he is supposed to. It's Mark Ingram, too. It's why Pat Mayo hates Mark Ingram. Worst place, Jared Cook. If you get 500, 600 yards and 7-8 touchdowns, that's a Jared Cook stat line and what you're probably going to get. But again, the problem is, good luck predicting what weeks it's going to be.
Well, the funny thing is, Hunter Henry's basically been putting up Jared Cook stat lines. You know, he's been a little bit more kind of like reliable and from a week to week standpoint, but you're going to get the probably 600 yards, six touchdowns, 55 catches, you know? But to the nature of Jared Cook, I don't know if you can change it. Tiger stripes.
Well, I think the difference is, if you would have said Hunter Henry in non PPR, I think it's a good parallel. The thing is, Hunter Henry helps himself with a few more. Like, he doesn't usually come away with 2 for 40 or 3 for 45 or something like that. Hunter Henry's usually, if he doesn't get a touchdown, he'll get 5 or 6 to keep him in that 7-8 point range per week and half and full point PPR. So that's the difference right there.
But is that still true though? Like, is Jared Cook now in a better spot? Jared Cook by himself in Hunter Henry's old starting position in a better spot from a fantasy perspective than Hunter Henry is in New England with Jonnu Smith?
So is he? is he what he was with the Raiders, where he had 68 catches, 900 yards? I mean, in 101 targets. That.
Yeah, he's not years. That, but like,
let's also realize that he arguably. At best case scenario, he's fourth on the team. So you got Eckler, Mike Williams, and Keenan Allen. Best case. And that's even before you include Jalen Guyton, or whether you want to say Johnson, or I still think it's Guyton, but he's probably fifth. So and that's really what it comes down to, especially if you're going to talk about Herbert's aggressiveness. I don't think he's, you know, unless we start sending Jared Cook on these seam routes all the time, which I don't know that he can do anymore like he used to. Like, if you told me Jared Cook 5 years ago in this situation replacing Hunter, I'd be like, all right, fine. I like maybe
you would not have said fine. You would not have said that. You
no, I would have said fine if you want him. I still wouldn't want him on my team, but I would have said fine if you really want to take him. I'm not going to tell you not to. You just ignore him altogether. But at this point of his career, ignore him altogether.
I'm just curious, where do you imagine ranking him? I don't know if you've already ranked your tight ends.
75th. Don't draft
Jared
him.
Cook or Cole Kmet, who you got?
Cole Kmet.
I'm saying it's 10 times hyperbole and you're actually ranking him about 7.5.
No, he will not be inside my top 10. He won't be inside my top 15. There's no upside to it.
He will be in my top 15. He won't be in my top 10.
There's zero upside to drafting Jared
Cook.
How
many tight ends are there upside to?
A lot. Cole Kmet could break out. I'll take Cole Kmet. I'll take Irv Smith now with Kyle Rudolph gone.
Yeah, but don't you think he's like a Cole Kmet?
Irv Smith's going to be like tight end 7.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Are we going to do what we do on my podcast? We're going to make a list? Like Chris Jericho? Are we going to do that?
Yeah. Let's break out a list here.
Let's make a list. I haven't looked at tight ends in, you know, a few months.
Hold
but
on.
Let's I'll do
gonna,
it. Let's
I'm going to pull up my way too early rankings.
Yeah.
And see what's changed
from there.
I have a
Fantasy Pros window open here as we speak.
Let's do it.
Isn't that Voldemort?
Let's make a list.
Give Fantasy
tight
Pros
ends.
A little plug there. Let's see.
All right,
Kelsey,
so
Kittle, Waller, Andrews, Hockenson. I think we're all in on those five being.
Jared Cook didn't even make my top 20.
Goddard, Fant, Tonyan,
yes,
Henry,
yes,
all above.
Yes.
Gesicki.
Yes. Blake Jarwin, Hayden Hurst, Irv Smith, Cole Kmet, Austin Hooper, Tyler Higbee, Rob Gronkowski, Eric Ebron. Well, probably not. Eric Ebron. Depending.
I don't know if I'm going. I don't know if I'm going Austin Hooper over Jared Cook. I got to think about that.
Why would anything be different for Austin Hooper this year than it was last year?
Why would be anything different than Jared Cook was last year?
Well, because you know,
he's probably got a better quarterback this year than he had last year from a just fantasy production standpoint.
Jared Cook was 17th last year, and right behind him is Higbee, so I'm taking Higbee, obviously. Now
why would anything be different? I mean, well, he's got
Stafford. Everett's gone.
But you know what?
And he's got Stafford.
Yeah, he's got both. Stafford, but he's also both. Now got DeSean Jackson now there.
Oh, yeah, for what? The 37 snaps he plays in week one? Oh, God.
You know they brought him in for a reason.
Yeah, to be a deep threat to get 2 balls per game. So, yeah, like Zach Ertz still might end up on a new team, and then we can get excited about him again. So, can and we? I tell you, guess what? You know who's gone? Jared Cook is gone. Guess who gets to step up now? Adam Trautman. I'll take Adam Trautman's upside over wasting a pick on Jared Cook. That's my point. It's not, look, yes, if you told me Jared Cook versus Trautman, I'm taking Cook. I understand that argument. But, again, it's a wasted pick because it's what I made the argument for the longest time towards the end of the career for Greg Jennings. Like, at the end of his career. Like, I love Greg Jennings, the player. But at the end of his career, for fantasy purposes, there was no point. Yeah. He was your wide receiver 5 or 6. He was never going to get back to being a wide receiver 3. At this point, Jared Cook is not going to be a top 10. There's zero upside for him. If you want tight end 17, 16, if you want that, go draft him. But I'm drafting for upside at tight end. I'm drafting for somebody who can maybe be a top 10 tight end. And that's not happening with Cook.
All right, Jake, you're really selling DeSean pretty hard. I mean, obviously the injuries are going to be a thing. He's not going to play 16 games. He's not going to play 12 games probably. But like, Let's imagine a world in which DeSean Jackson plays 10 games. I mean, isn't this a fun spot for him with Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford, who loves to throw the ball deep, and Sean McVay and the connections that he already has with some of the coaching staff? Like, this is – we know there's going to be big-time injury questions with him. We know he's going to miss some time. But, like, could you have drawn up a better place for DeSean Jackson at 34 years old to be than with this Rams team?
Yes, retirement.
Come on.
Stop playing this game with DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson has nothing left at this point. Like, yes, okay, for real life purposes, it's fun. If I'm a Matthew Stafford drafter, it's fun. If I'm talking about DeSean Jackson, no. I could not care less about DeSean Jackson. But even if he plays, even if you told me today, DeSean Jackson plays 14 games, don't care. He's not top two in this opportunity for targets, probably not even top three. I do think Wait a minute.
Top
what?
Four. If I told you he's playing 14 games, you're still not interested in him.
No.
As a
no.
bye week.
No, because you know who he is at this point.
As a
you know
bye
who
week,
he is?
He's going to pop for 103 and a touchdown.
You
in
can,
a good
you
spot
can enjoy,
when I've got my regulars on a bye.
Just like Jared Cook and Will Fuller. He's a poor man's Will Fuller. Just like those two. Good
What's
luck predicting.
What's wrong with a poor man's Will Fuller playing 14
because
games?
Because you're never
you going to
predict his good weeks. Because you're going to plug him in on your bye and you're going to get a wonderful 1-for-17 and be like, I can't believe I went back to DeSean Jackson.
Well, what do you because expect when you have your regulars on buys? You're not expecting your next guy to
I expect somebody better than DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson's garbage at this point. Garbage. Retirement. Don't waste it.
God.
This is don't waste your draft pick on DeSean Jackson. And if you do, don't come bitching at me in week 7 when you don't understand why you're 2-5.
I was going to throw it down to Brandon to defend the West Coast, be our West Coast defender here with you on the East Coast and me in the Midwest, but I think he's yep, there he's gone. I think he's frozen down there. He did give us a heads up that there was he had the power company out at his house, and there was maybe going to be a time where he got cut off.
Look, that's how much you know DeSean Jackson's terrible. Even the power company's like, he's not worth talking about.
Oh, man. So is this where we say everything we've ever wanted to say about Brandon?
Yeah. Good. Stop showing up late to our videos, Brandon.
Yeah, this is what you get. You show up late, you leave early, you blame it on the power company. Screw the Seahawks. Screw
I'm more
the
excited to talk about the
That's
next one.
That's what we say.
I'll happily talk about the next one.
Well, yeah, Josh Reynolds, the guy who leaves open the spot that DeSean Jackson now fills going to Tennessee. I agree with you on this one, too. This is an exciting one. I mean, he's going to have more opportunity than he's ever seen in his career, right? I mean, we know that it's going to still be a very run-heavy offense with Derrick Henry, but Jonnu's gone. Corey Davis is gone. And Josh Reynolds should get plenty of opportunity in this offense, shouldn't he?
As of today. So I said this. So it's two things. So and to go back to DeSean Jackson, I actually made a joke. It's like the signing makes a ton of sense until you realize Van Jefferson's better at this point of his career than DeSean Jackson. But no, I say that I bring up Van Jefferson for a reason. So the Josh Reynolds tweet that I put out is until I could see the Titans investing a day two pick in wide receiver. There's still going to be a hell of a lot of good names and a hell of a lot of good names that, you know, Justin Jefferson wasn't a day one pick. So, I'm not saying you're going to get Justin Jefferson on the Titans. All I'm just saying is there's going to be talent at the wide receiver position there on day two. Mm-hmm. And if the Titans do spend a day two pick, I think that really hurts Josh Reynolds. And hell, they might go draft Freiermuth. And you have a tight end situation, or people love Fursker. So I don't think it's Jino steps out and all of his targets are left over. I think it's mainly Corey Davis. As of today, yes, I'm with you. I love Josh Reynolds as of today as a wide receiver 4. I think it's a great wide receiver 4 with some upside for more. But if they draft a day 2, now if they wait till day 3, Josh Reynolds, yes, all day up. Yeah. Right. It's people that are listening to the audio up, 2 thumbs up for that. But if it's a day 2 pick, I would say Josh Reynolds, I would be hesitant to invest.
So best case scenario for Josh Reynolds is 2020 Corey Davis? Is that
I think that's
is
fair.
That feel fair?
That's fair. Yeah. And with Corey Davis, you know, the breakout season, even if you look at it game per game, you know, it was better consistency than DeSean Jackson. He's better consistency than Will Fuller a few years ago. Like, Will Fuller was pretty great for a while there, but it's better consistency of that, but it's still limited just because you mentioned it's Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown first. Really, what this comes down to, I'm just super excited for A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's going to be finally inside the top 5.
Yeah, and he's going to be getting just like – it's finally going to be the season that where he gets – where he's a double-digit target per game guy.
If he gets 140 targets.
160 targets.
I was just going to say
140. A little less than that.
I was going to say 140 plus, he'll be inside the top 5 wide receivers.
140 plus, you've got A.J. Brown finishing the top 5.
Yeah, he'll be pushing Tyreek Hill with 140 targets.
Yeah. You know, Corey Davis was very consistent last year. 100 yard games. Yeah, he was, but even just the last two games of the season, the one game we don't care about in fantasy. I mean, week 15, he had four catches, 110 yards and a touchdown. Yeah. Week 13, he had 11 for 182 and a touchdown.
Yeah, he just, so, I mean, the Jacksonville game, massive disappointment, went goose egg against the Packers. And those are killers right there.
Yeah.
He had a zero earlier in the season too, didn't he?
Against the Bears in week 9.
Oh, the Bears. There you go. Well, he doesn't have to worry about Kyle Fuller anymore because you guys are the only ones that don't know how to work a salary cap.
And with that, we're going to call it an episode here on the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Brandon called it an episode a few minutes ago, the bum. Me and Jake, we stayed with you to the end, so just remember that when you're thinking about your Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast host and co-host power rankings. Just keep that in mind. We'll be back with you next week. Check out that deal also at The Athletic, $1 a month to get in the door, get a subscription. Jake Seeley, Brandon Funston, I'm Michael Beller. We're back with you next week. Talk to you then. We'll be right back.